Long ago, I fell victim to every trap of the fat loss industry. I let coaches prey on my insecurity and lack of knowledge. I was led to fear carbs, exercise obsessively, fast, and take every supplement under the sun. And all I got for it was bodybuilding trophies and depression. That's why I built Muscle Bound Mama, to prevent women from falling into the same traps I did. I'm Sophie Smith-Doré, and I help women change their relationship with food for life. No gimmicks, no shame, just metabolic science and love. In this podcast, we call out the food demonization and fat shaming of the weight loss industry. We discuss how social conditioning and outdated nutrition science have groomed women to struggle with body image and nutritional competence. We love carbs, we love our bodies, and we won't be told otherwise. We eat the fucking cake. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Muscle Bound Mama Eat the Fucking Cake podcast. This episode is called Normalizing the Struggle. And I think this is something that a lot of us need help with. My favorite part of my job is that I'm invited into the experiences of women from all walks of life. And as a species, we tend to gravitate toward like-minded people. And as a result, we really only see our own lives mirrored, like living in a vacuum. I see things in my feed that I relate to, like tantruming children and the dreaded day in July when Costco puts their snowsuits out, the pre-sale link for popular kids entertainers, all of those things. Now, most of my friends share lighthearted things, you know, and when they did share their struggles, it was always in a lighthearted way. I think this experience is probably similar for many of us. No one wants to be that friend who complains about their kids or their spouse or their job because we just don't do that. I mean, what would people think if they knew how much we really struggle, right? But we really aren't meant to do this on our own. Our species thrive in community, and that's not so that we can brag and compete, it's so that we can seek support and be supportive, and so we can seek love and be loving. And in fact, it's evolutionary. Had we not collected in communities in the early days of our species, we wouldn't even exist today. Community elders with skills taught the next generation how to carry out the tasks that the community required of them, and that mentorship was witnessed by the generations under them. So it wasn't just the skills that got passed on, but also that sense of teaching and community and mentorship. So where did it all go wrong? And by that I mean, we still have lots of words for community, right? Like chosen family and the highly inappropriate tribe, which is cultural appropriation, full stop. If you say that, unlearn it now, please. I'm asking you as an Indigenous person who was raised without that part of my culture because of cultural genocide due to colonization. Now, having words for community is a good first step, but we aren't carrying out the responsibilities of the word, are we? We know this because we live in a world where we're more visible than ever because of social media, but we're so disconnected from our fellow humans, more so probably than ever. And it turns out that having people accessible to us doesn't necessarily create the community that we need. Vulnerability does, though. When we share our highlights, we only present ourselves in our best moments or at, you know, least what we perceive a perfect moment to look like. Our kids are smiling and not fighting. Our homes are clean or at least tidy. And we have a full face of makeup and a ring light, right? Don't forget the ring light. And if you don't have that, though, don't worry. There are like 20 filters on your phone camera and even on each social media platform app. They all have their own filters, too, in case your camera filter wasn't enough. Now, I'm not here to judge folks for using filters and wanting to look their best, but I am here to point out that the vulnerability required to really connect and get that sense of community we all need on a fundamental level is not attained through just witnessing and sharing perfect moments. Vulnerability is messy. It has poor timing, and it doesn't come with filters. There are no retakes. There's no staging. Vulnerability is defined as willingness to show emotion or to allow one's weaknesses to be seen or known. Willingness to be at risk of emotional hurt. Now think about that for a moment. Do you allow yourself to be vulnerable? Do you let others in to see the real you, who you really are? Most of us struggle with this. And with this episode, I don't want to just share with you that you're not alone in the struggle, because you're definitely not. I mean, that's not even a question. But I want to help give you some tools to begin to allow yourself to be vulnerable so that you can normalize the struggles that we all collectively face. So here we go. The first one is to give yourself compassion. Remind yourself of how brave you are to be vulnerable, no matter how small it seems at the moment, and no matter the outcome. Now, this is hard. When I was little, when I was upset, I was not comforted. And I think my entire generation was raised this way. We were told to suck it up, don't be a baby. We were too emotional or acting crazy. And boys were taught that they were being little girls or wimpy when they were being emotional, right? And when our parents made mistakes, they literally gaslighted us. Like, I full on apologize to my kids when I'm an asshole. And maybe that's not the right way. I'm not a parenting expert. I don't really know what I'm doing. But my kids also apologize right away when they hurt someone. So I think it's okay. Now, I don't know, but I'm telling you that in 10 years, if they're in therapy recovering from me, I guess I'll know. And I'll share that with you. Believe me. Now, remember, even if the outcome is someone responding like an asshole, you still need to give yourself compassion for opening yourself up in the first place, because that is not a small thing. The second is avoid focusing on other people's opinions of you. This one is hard. And I feel like I'm not bad at this when things are fine, but when I am fine and things are fine, no one's telling me they hate me, right? When things aren't fine and someone is mad at me, I am not always fine. I don't know about you, but I have a really strong example of this. And this is me being vulnerable, by the way. 2 years ago, a series of articles came from some very brave members of the BIPOC community in my town. And they were discussing their experiences with racism in this area. Now, the mayors in the Valley towns were asked for the response by media, and our mayor at the time, thank goodness he's not mayor anymore, was the one who literally denied systemic racism exists. I was furious and made my thoughts public, along with, you know, many other people in the community. There was a lot of really angry people about this for good reason. And as an Indigenous person who has been public with her own struggles with internalized racism and an advocate for the LGBTQ2S+ folks in our community, national media reached out to me for my thoughts. Now, there were several articles as I went through the process of creating a template for other interested people to file a formal complaint against the mayor with the integrity commissioner. He had to pay for this, right? You can't just go around saying this stuff. And I had plenty of negative feedback from people who supported the mayor, but I was okay with that criticism. But the one that got me was after a local reporter, whom I know and I've worked with plenty of times, published this article about it. And it was a great article, and I don't regret anything I said, but he took the liberty of introducing me as local BIPOC leader, a title I never claimed and did not approve. This response was not great. A local business owner, former business owner, I guess, blasted me on our community Facebook page of tens of thousands of people, saying that I don't speak for the BIPOC community. Literally tagged me, Sophie Smith-Doray does not speak for the BIPOC community. So she didn't just say it, she tagged me. She wanted me to know that she said it. Now, this really hurt me because I had considered her a friend, and she didn't reach out to me privately to see if I was the one who gave myself that title and why. She just went right to social media. So not a friend, obviously. I had a lot of conflicting feelings here. So first, I'm Indigenous, but I was raised with internalized racism. I battled feelings of not being entitled to my culture because it was stolen from me through colonization and a racist white father. So I had only recently begun, you know, in the last 5 years, to explore the layers and recognize the challenges I'd faced because of it. Now, here's this white woman whom I had considered a friend blasting me publicly because of a title I did not give myself. And in fact, the entire interview I gave, I actually typed and submitted to the reporter because I wanted to avoid misspeaking. And I was sharing thoughts with fellow moderators of an anti-racism group that I belong to. So I actually submitted the draft to them and made edits based on feedback from one of the BIPOC community members who was actually in the original CBC interview. And it wasn't the context, it was the title and the assumptions others made about it. So this took me a really long time to move on from. Reclaiming Indigenous culture that you were denied because of colonialism and internalized racism is extremely vulnerable. Anyone of mixed heritage will tell you the same thing. You struggle with feelings of being a fraud, but so desperately want to live out your birthright. These things are in my soul. And even fully Indigenous people who grow up off reserve struggle with this in, you know, comparison to on reserve folks. This, what is Indigenous enough, right? And for who? Now, this is the whole question. We have to stop focusing on other people's opinions of us because really, for who, right? I know who I am and I know my struggles. I don't have to explain them, though my neurodiverse brain wants to so badly. I was about as vulnerable as it gets in that situation. And my greatest fear was realized. I struggled to be vulnerable in the first place because it fucking hurts sometimes. But that's the point of vulnerability, right? Because you know what happened? I got to see where my people were and who were not my people. That woman, not my people. And her people are probably not my people either, particularly if they witnessed this and they said and did nothing. That was the gem of this pain, of this vulnerability, of this risk. My husband, who is actually a bystander training facilitator, he educates people on bystander training, met with her privately to discuss this and do what he's trained to do. And he came home and agreed with me that this was a gift. So since this time, I've had to work harder at allowing myself to be vulnerable because I had started before this, of course, but this really set me back. So I feel this in my soul, and I won't lie to you, but I'm committed to the process because the struggle is where the growth occurs, right? I'm going to say that again. The struggle is where the growth occurs. Don't shy away from it. It requires a lot of self-talk to get to this place where I can be objective and say, this internet stranger is allowed to disagree with you because you disagree with most people too. And it's unlikely that they're losing sleep over my feelings. So why am I losing sleep over theirs? And this has to apply when they aren't internet strangers too, right? We take our lessons. Now, the third is to give up the idea of perfection. When we're focused on perfection, we're placing ourselves in a powerless position because perfection simply doesn't exist. When we compare ourselves to the image of perfection, we're saying, what I am now is not good enough. And this mindset keeps us from showing up as ourselves. I speak to women every day who avoid social events because they're ashamed of their bodies. And the only reason they can't accept themselves in their bodies right now is they subscribe to the concept of perfection. And it's hard not to subscribe to it. It's shoved down our throats. Showing up only when we're perfect is not showing up at all. It's performing. Showing up where you are means accepting yourself in all forms, because the truth is our bodies take on a multitude of forms over our lifetime. And if we can only accept ourselves when we're perfect, yikes, right? I want you to imagine a six-year-old saying that to you. It would break your heart. The fourth point is to vocalize your feelings. Now, so much of our emotional energy as women is spent meeting the needs of others, and often at our own expense. An overwhelming majority of my clients struggle to ask for what they need, much less what they want. They often begin coaching hoping to do this work on their own without the support and even without the knowledge sometimes of their families. When things do get busy or challenging to navigate, rather than allow a partner or kids, older kids, to take more responsibility, they just pick it all up on themselves. And it's heavy, so they have to put their own needs down to make space for it. And most of the time, they have partners who would take more on. But, and this is probably familiar to you, it's easier to do it themselves, right? This is the common response I hear to this. The trouble is that they drop their needs to take care of something, but there's always something else that needs attention. So it's really an endless cycle. Learning to vocalize our feelings is so hard because it goes against our conditioning, our social conditioning. And if you're in a hetero partnership, it's often against your partner's social conditioning to recognize your struggle and to take something on for you. So we wait for them to see that we need help, but they literally cannot. They're not programmed to. And we're all programmed by the society we grew up in. So we may even resent them now for not being able to recognize our struggles. Why can't we normalize asking for help the same way we normalize taking it all on in the first place and drowning silently? We can. It requires vulnerability. We have to embrace the discomfort of asking for help when we were socially conditioned not to. Because remember, discomfort is where the growth happens. Now, I hope that you were able to identify with this topic today. I hope that you're all good, but likely you are feeling a lot of this. And I hope that you got some comfort in knowing that you're not alone in your struggle. We have to acknowledge that it is okay not to be okay. And our inability to take on everything and do it flawlessly with grace is completely unacceptable. And I mean that. It isn't just unreasonable. It's unacceptable. But in order for others to see it that way, we have to show it. We have to show up ourselves. We have to show up in this world as we are and not what we think we're supposed to be, and manage it in a way that honors us, not one that minimizes our experiences. No more performing, okay? So by focusing on self-compassion, not concerning ourselves with the opinions of others, and rejecting the idea of perfection and vocalizing our feelings, we're saying yes to vulnerability and growth and no to struggling in silence. Let's do this, Mama. Thanks for listening, everyone. And don't forget to eat the fucking cake.
If you're loving what you're learning in this podcast, you will love our amazing community of like-minded women. Hop over to our website to learn more about all the ways to be part of this supportive powerhouse community of ass-kicking mamas at musclebound.com. And don't forget to follow us on social while you're there. Lastly, it would make my day if you could rate, review, and subscribe. It helps more Musclebound mamas like you find our show. No matter what your goals, we've got you, mama.